morning. Please be seated. All right, we have two cases on our 10:30 docket. We'll begin with case number 3, then we will take a brief recess to do a panel change for the fourth case. We'll call case number 3, XTO versus Nicolai. If the clerk will please announce counsel for the parties.
May it please the court, Ms. Brandy Manning will argue for the appellant, and Ms. Dina Strome will argue for the appellate.
All right, Ms. Manning.
May it please the court. I'm Brandy Manning. I represent XTO Energy. In the case before the court, I'm going to argue on behalf of all of appellants. Our issues are aligned at this point, and rather than argue by committee, they trusted me to make their argument for them. The appellants challenged the trial court's judgment on cross motions for summary judgment. The judgment voided two ancient deeds, the most recent of which is 100 years old, the Madewell deed and the Shields deed. And although the Madewell deed is in the Nicolai's chain of title, the judgment also vested record title in the Nicolai's. The judgment denied all relief not specifically granted. By cross appeal, the Nicolai's argue that the trial court erred in denying their claims for adverse possession and for attorney's fees. The court below should have granted the appellant's motions for summary judgment on the affirmative defense of estoppel by deed, which would have then necessitated the denial of the Nicolai's motion for summary judgment on their title issues. We ask this court to reverse and render judgment, granting the appellant's motions for summary judgment on the basis that the Nicolai's are stopped by a recital in their chain of title, and it's in the spear deed, from challenging the validity of the Madewell reservation. This holding would resolve the entire dispute between and among the parties. Only if the court denies on the ground of estoppel by deed, then we would ask the court to reverse and render that the Madewell deed is valid, including its reservation, and then ask the court to affirm on the adverse possession and fee issues that the Nicolai's challenge. Estoppel by deed is like any other principle of estoppel. It's the proposition that all parties, including their privies, to a deed, a contract, etc., are bound by recitals in those documents. Stated a little differently, if there's a deed in your chain of title that recites the effect of a prior deed, the parties are bound by that recital. They're stopped from denying the stated effect of that prior deed. The court in Green versus White, 1942 Supreme Court case, discussed it in terms of contract principles and said that a deed is really just a contract by which the parties determine how title will be held between and among them in the future. And it's simply unfair for a party to claim under a deed to accept the benefit of that contract and at the same time deny the part of the contract that they don't like. In this case, and as in Green also, a reservation of the minerals in the grantor. In this case, the same effect would apply to the spear deed, which is the 1922 deed containing the recital.
And isn't the problem you have, though, that the case you all tried was really not the trespass to try title suit? It was merely the trying of the suit to remove the cloud on the title allegedly created by your client.
Your Honor, the motions for summary judgment, XTO's motion raised three grounds. It was stated as four, but it was really three. One was estoppel by deed, that the Nicolai's were stopped to even bring these claims by the recital and the spear deed. The second claim was the title issue. The Nicolai's don't have title, therefore they can't challenge our title, therefore we never asked for title. We didn't even attempt to chain title or anything like that. That was the second ground. And actually, there's two grounds stated as four. But we did move on that issue. It was argued. The evidence is the deed was in the record. The case is the Green versus White. Waco Bridge, which kind of ironically was 12 years earlier than the Madewell deed. It's one of the earlier applications of estoppel by deed. The Angel case, in that case, I think it's very interesting. There was no deed. The recital at issue, there was a deed that granted, conveyed some land, and then recited that there had been prior conveyances of that land. There was no record of deed. There was no any other indication that those conveyances had in fact been made. But the court held that the fact that that recital was in the same deed by which the party claimed their title, they couldn't both say, I have title, but I deny that these prior conveyances had been made.
So what do we do with the trial court statement that there was no ruling on the actual title to the property, only on the cloud?
The judgment actually grants.
She said on the record something to the effect of, well, I didn't grant the summary judgment on the adverse possession.
On adverse possession, right. This is estoppel by deed.
Okay.
The trial court says that, and that's going to be something that the Nicolais raised by cross appeal, that they moved on and presented enough evidence to carry the day on adverse possession. Significantly, I've said the estoppel by deed resolves all issues. It also moves the adverse possession issue. If the Nicolais were stopped to challenge the validity of the Madewell deed, the Madewell reservation then effected severance of the mineral and surface estates, so that the Nicolais' argument that they've adversely possessed a surface has no impact on the mineral estate. So holding in line with Green versus White and these other cases mentioned resolves the whole case, moots the adverse possession issue, and you don't even have to reach the validity of the deed, honestly.
Well, since you're invoking the Green case, should we consider what's fair?
Absolutely.
Okay. So it's, what is your position as to what's fair?
My position is that in 1904, two parties agreed among themselves, I'm conveying you this property, I'm reserving the minerals. Parties have relied on those deeds for more than a century. In 1922, also in the chain of title conveying the surface that the Nicolais now claim, there's a deed that says, I convey you the surface, but it is expressly understood that the minerals are not conveyed because they were reserved in the 1904 Madewell deed. And it lays out the grantor grantee, the date. I mean, it couldn't be clearer. It would be unfair to allow the Nicolais to say, I have surface by virtue of this chain of title, the spear deed included, and at the same time say, well, I really don't like the fact that the minerals were reserved. That would be unfair.
Of course, everyone that's living now at the time that you sought these leases, who did you think owned the minerals?
Well, initially, Joint Resources had this property. And my understanding, and this is just from, I'm not sure it's in the record. Do you want me to tell you anyway? Okay. I think Joint Resources initially went to the Nicolais.
They thought they had it.
They thought they had it, right.
And they thought they had it.
They do.
And apparently, everyone thought they had it.
Right.
But it's fair that they don't have it.
You know, that's what title insurance is for.
Okay, I'm just asking
right.
What you thought was fair if we're going to invoke the Green case.
Okay, and you know, parenthetically, the title insurer is the one that created this issue. They missed the Madewell deed. I think they must have missed the spear deed as well. That case, as far as I know, is still pending. I mean, nobody wants to see a surface owner and a homeowner in the position that they're in, but by the same token, if XTO owns those minerals.
In that position, but you'll just drive right up and drill in their front yard and tear down their 150-year-old pecan trees and all that.
Well, and as I asked the trial court, I have to ask this court also, those at this point are just allegations. I think when the records are read, the facts are vetted, they won't look quite that one-sided.
Okay.
I'd also like to point the court to a couple of cases that are not cited in the brief, but that do some very extensive discussion of Green versus White, Waco Bridge, and several of the earlier estoppel by deed cases. And those cases are Earwood versus Smart. It's 107 Southwest 3rd 1. It's a 2002 San Antonio case. And then State versus Davis, 368 Southwest 2nd 658, a Houston 1963 case. Now, the arguments made by the Nicolais against the estoppel by deed argument raised by appellants, there are two of them. First is that estoppel by deed has to be the product of a valid deed, and that is fair. Just as you're only bound by a contract if it's valid, the deed would have to be valid as well. They misapply this doctrine here. This doctrine would prevent a reliance on the spear deed if the spear deed were void. But there's no allegation here that the spear deed is void, the 1922 deed that contains the recital. Instead, the argument is that the Madewell deed is void, so that just doesn't apply here at all. The second one is that the recital and the spear deed does not give rise to a right, does not create a reservation, and that's true. But no estoppel creates a right. Estoppel simply closes the mouth of a party who's relied on one hand on something and at the same time wants to deny it. So the issue is not whether the recital in the spear deed creates a reservation. It's whether that recital prevents the Nicolais from claiming that it does not. And that's the position of the appellants here. If the court reverses on estoppel by deed, it resolves all the issues in the case. First, it quiets the title to the minerals and appellants, precludes the Nicolais from asserting that the reservation is invalid. It renders the adverse possession claim moot. Again, if we have a reservation, we have a valid severance. If we have a valid severance, the Nicolais adverse possession of the surface has no effect on the minerals. It restores title to the surface in the Nicolais. The way the judgment stands right now, it voids the Madewell deed. The Madewell deed is the source of the Nicolais title to the surface. Now, it also goes on to vest record title in the judgment, which is inconsistent, but there's no claim here that the Nicolais don't own the surface. The appellants have never made that claim. And it also probably touches on the fee issue. Again, the fees that the Nicolais sought, XTO, or the appellants argued on two grounds that they should not be able to recover. One, that this is really a title case, but the other, that under the Declaratory Judgment Act, it would be inequitable or unjust in this case for either party to bear fees because neither party created this issue. The issue was a title insurer who missed a couple of deeds. The order denies fees generally, so unless it's an abuse of discretion for the trial court to have done that, we don't even have to get to whether this is really a title case so that fees are not recoverable. Again, if the court finds that the Nicolais are stopped, that sort of bolsters even the fact that the trial court was acting within its discretion because these cases should never have been brought. They're stopped to bring them. The only other issue I want to be sure and touch on is that this judgment is indivisible. There's been some claims made that not all parties appealed. We've got many, many unrepresented, unknown parties here, some of which did not appeal. But under the Elliott case, Texas Supreme Court cites the long-settled rule that when the only way to grant effective relief is to reverse the entire judgment, that's the appropriate thing to do. And the Nicolais response is, well, those were all indivisible judgments. You know, here we could own fractional interest. People do that all the time. The problem with that argument is not the outcome that the Nicolais would own fractional interests, but the basis on which they would own such interest. The basis would be that the deed is void as to some parties, but not void as to others. The description satisfies a statute of fraud as to some parties, but not as to others. If there were ever a case where the judgment is indivisible, a deed, it's either valid or it's not. It either satisfies a statute of frauds or it's not. You can rely on it or not. The parties are stopped or they're not. There's no middle ground here. So it's not the outcome that's the issue. It's the basis upon which you have to rely to get to that outcome. The fact that I'm not sure how you'd ever run title from this point forward because you wouldn't know which party was affected in what way. And that's the kind of result that in the Turner case, the 1982 Texas Supreme Court case, is said is just untenable. It's illogical. And we won't do that. Should the court reach the sufficiency issue, the validity of the deed, there are several longstanding rules that apply here. One is that the purpose of a description is not to identify the property, but rather to furnish the means of identification. And the language that you see repeated over and over is, that is certain which can be made certain. We have the parallelogram theory, both the Shields deed and the Field Notes existing writings at the time drew a parallelogram. It's very easy then to go in and close off the right acreage. Reading these deeds, it's hard to imagine. It's easy to see why nobody's argued about this before. It's pretty clear. Adverse possession, again, our position is that it was neither moved on. There was no evidence. And, again, the estoppel issue, I think, is the key issue here. Unless the Nicolais can get past that, we don't get to any other issue in the case.
How does estoppel by deed theory play into the contrary theory of adverse possession?
Well, here, if the estoppel by deed here would prevent the Nicolais from challenging the validity of the Madewell deed, and significantly, in the Madewell deed, we have, I convey you this property, description, and I hereby reserve the minerals in said property. We're dealing with one description, not a description as conveyance and a description as reservation. One description. If that deed is valid, the reservation is valid. If the reservation is valid, the minerals and surface have been severed. If the minerals and surface have been severed, the Nikolai's allegations of their conduct on the surface, and that's all they've alleged. They haven't alleged that they've gone out and drilled a well or done anything that would independently adversely possess the minerals. All of their allegations are as to the surface. But we know when the surface and mineral estates have been severed, adverse possession of the surface does not affect the ownership of the minerals. So if they're stopped to deny the validity of that deed and the reservation within it, even if all of their allegations are true, they cannot adversely possess the minerals.
Thank you, Ms. Manning. Ms. Stroh? Did I say your name correctly?
You did. Okay. It's Stroh like the beer, not related.
May it please the court. Justice Livingston, you kind of put your finger on the nail of the case. The question is this a suit to quiet title or is it a trespass to title? And the reality is that under 166A, the appellants actually waived that argument. That it was not addressed in the trial court whether it was a trespass to title until far after the briefing had been filed, the hearing was held, the phone call from the judge to the parties. It wasn't actually until the motion to deny attorney's fees that it was raised that there was a trespass to title issue. So in terms of that, and you'll see it extensively in the briefing by appellants, that is all waived, both under 166A as well as the typical lack of preservation of error. Justice McCoy, you asked about fairness. Well, what we're talking about here is two property owners who had their property in fee simple. They had it since 1981, which does play into the question of adverse possession, which I'll get into later. They've had it since 1981. They were approached by XTO about taking the minerals from their property, and then later approached by Joint Resources saying, oh, you don't own the property, actually. I mean, basically, there was kind of a playing of both sides. Now, in terms of fairness, the fair thing to have done would have been for XTO to have gone to the court initially and dealt with this. What actually happened is the Nikolais had to file a suit to quiet title. Now, there was a counterclaim from XTO and then the eight Holman defendants, as they're called in the briefing, which they sought to quiet title and they sought a declaratory judgment. What's interesting about this is you've got basically identical claims. You've got both the Nikolais and XTO and the Holman defendants saying suit to quiet title. Then you've got declaratory judgment to declare their rights, and you've got a request for attorney's fees, and I'll get to attorney's fees later. So you've got identical pleadings. Later, when XTO loses, they say, no, it's a trespass to title, which had already been waived because it was not addressed in the summary judgment. They say, and you are not entitled to attorney's fees, and we have withdrawn ours. And because it's a trespass to title, what you've got is, though the Declaratory Judgment Act provides that you may have attorney's fees, it's discretionary, they say as a matter of law, you are not entitled to it because it's really a trespass to title claim. All of this is waived. All of it is waived. So what you have is what was proven at the trial court level. It's kind of a house of cards. You've got the Shields deed from 1882, which is not sufficient. It says about the 92 and a half acres. Let me get the exact language for you. 92 and a half acres of the east end of said 160-acre survey. Well, you don't know. I mean, I know that you've heard discussion about the parallelogram theory. Well, the parallelogram theory actually requires a little bit more detail. It requires, for instance, a boundary. It requires a corner. all of the cases that have been cited by the appellants are distinguishable on that basis. The parallelogram theory doesn't apply beyond the fact that if you actually look at the meets and bounds, it's not a parallelogram. A parallelogram has equal sides, top and bottom, equal sides, left and right. It is actually not a parallelogram. That theory actually truly doesn't apply here. So you've got the 92.5 acres at the east end of the 160-acre survey. East end. Now, one of the arguments is made is, well, the east end means it's got to be on the east side. Well, it's not half of the land. It is 92.5 acres on the east side. So you actually have an expert. You've got Mr. Hickman, who is a designated expert for XTO, and we deposed him. And Mr. Hickman says, oh, well, the Madewell deed, it's real easy. You take the 67.5, you take the 92.5, put them together, oh, we're done. The problem with that is you cannot rely on an existing, it has to be an existing writing. So that's where the House of Cards comes in. You've got the Madewell deed that relies on a void deed because that 92.5 acres on the east end, it doesn't provide sufficient information. And there are many cases that say that. We've cited a number of cases, including more recently the Fears case out of Texarkana, which described of a 50-acre area, 20 acres, I think, on the west end. And so when you're talking about the sufficiency of the Shields deed, it's clear that that deed is not valid. Then the Madewell deed, which relies on the Shields deed, which their expert says he actually needs the Shields deed in order to construe the Madewell deed, well, that's a house of cards. You can't rely on an invalid deed. You've got an invalid deed that they're saying the Madewell deed is good and sufficient because it relies on existing writing. Well, that existing writing is invalid. It is void. So there you go. The Madewell deed, it purports to have a reservation of mineral rights. That reservation of mineral rights now is invalid. The piece of property, the bundle of property rights, it all stays together because the Madewell deed is not valid. Now come to today's date.
Wait a second. The Madewell deed did do two things. So how do you respond to their argument that the estoppel by deed theory prevents you in this litigation, in this part of the litigation, from asserting the voidness of the Madewell deed, since that's the deed that you're going to claim under?
Your Honor, when you're talking about estoppel by deed, it actually requires a valid deed. And that's the Angel case that you heard Ms. Manning describe. The Angel case actually says estoppel by deed is the product of a good and valid deed. Well, you don't have a good and valid deed in the Madewell deed, so that reservation of mineral rights, it doesn't stop anything because it is void. It doesn't actually, when you have a reservation of mineral rights, it has to be transferred in the instrument, and we've got an instrument like the Madewell deed, it is void. Now, you heard mention of the Spear deed. The Spear deed happened later. The Spear deed said, okay, we're going to transfer the surface property, but, you know, there's this thing that happened before. That in and of itself is not actually a conveyance of mineral rights. It's just a comment in that deed. And unless you have actual certainty in your deeds, there are no property rights. So what happens here is you've got the two, as they say, ancient deeds, which are not sufficient. Then you come to today's date. 1981, the Nicolais purchased the property. They are told, as you heard argument, that they have it in fee simple. Now, when you heard about the Old Republic case, that's against the title company. Now, what they say is, oh, yeah, we knew about that deed, but we knew it was void. We knew it was void. So you know, there's no need to indemnify or anything because what you have is a void deed. Adverse possession would cure everything. Not only do the Nicolais win on a suit to quiet title, because we have fulfilled all three elements of suit to quiet title, we have prior possession as well. And prior possession is an evidentiary ruling where if the plaintiff has adequate proof of title and there's no title shown in the defendants, which incidentally, if you look through the record, there's no title shown in the defendants, then we would win by prior possession. But, and the alternative and the point that if the court does not affirm the lower court's judgment, we would ask the court to reverse and remand is adverse possession. Because you heard argument from, or actually I think it was in their briefing, the appellants say that adverse possession was waived under 166A, the very thing that I mentioned about trespass to tie title. Now, but when you look at what was actually alleged, you've got a couple of things. First of all, it was mentioned in the summary judgment, not only in terms of the factual allegations, but also in the conclusion, which very clearly says that the Nicolais request that the trial court declare that they have the title by either suit to quiet title or adverse possession or prior possession. In XTO's response to the Nicolais motion for summary judgment, they actually address adverse possession. They say that adverse possession has not been proven and the evidence that is used to rely upon, well, disregard it, and they have an objection to it. And ultimately, at the end of the day, the trial court actually overruled their objections regarding the affidavit. And if you read the affidavit and what it verifies, you'll see why, because you've got a very detailed recitation of facts from Len Nicolai regarding adverse possession. Then again, at the motion to deny attorney's fees, you have Ms. Manning, who is new to the case, who says, Your Honor, it was never raised, 166A. You cannot argue about adverse possession. Well, the problem is it was pled. I mean, really what you need is kind of a more notice pleading. And they responded. They knew about it. They objected to the evidence. Adverse possession should have been considered by the court. The court at the hearing on the motion to deny attorney's fees, the court said, oh, well, you guys didn't know this, but when I was thinking about the summary judgment, I didn't think about that piece, and so I'm not going to grant it because I wasn't thinking about that piece at the time. Well, that doesn't mean it wasn't before the court, and it may not have been argued at the hearing because the briefing is very extensive and there are many points and there was only an hour, but that doesn't mean that the court should have denied that. The attorney at the trial court level did actually argue it. This brings me to attorney's fees.
Okay, wait one second. There's the order by the trial court. It declares your clients to be the rightful owners of the property in fee simple, which implies to me that the issue of adverse possession was tried and or maybe the trespass to tie title case was tried. What is your position on what you all tried in front of this court?
Your Honor, we did try the suit to quiet title, and you know the elements are that you have to have the elements, of course, that you have to have a specific right to the property, you have to have someone that has a cloud on the title, and then that the cloud is invalid. And so that was the case that was tried, and once the cloud was removed,
the finding of fee simple ownership in your clients is not necessary to the judgment that the trial court rendered.
Your Honor, I would disagree with that because it was requested in the declarations under the Declaratory Judgment Act.
Okay.
Regardless of whether the trial court actually thought in her head that she'd considered adverse possession, it is necessarily intertwined within all of the facts here.
Okay. So is the holding in this case potentially going to affect the old Republic case?
It is because, typically in insurance cases, you can actually choose to file a suit after the underlying case is done for the question of indemnification. In that particular case, there's also a question of duty to defend. So there would be an impact on the old Republic case on the indemnity piece. Because if we're successful here, then there would be no cloud on the title in terms of then. Now, we had to come at the trial court level, the Court of Appeals level, and fight the issue. But in terms of the Old Republic case, they still should have provided a duty to defend, and so there would still be ongoing questions about basically attorney's fees should this court not grant the attorney's fees, which the attorney's fees issue, I think this court should take a look at that because the court decided as a matter of law that the Nicolais were not entitled to attorney's fees. And the reason they did that is because the suit to quiet title seemed to be converted into trespass to quiet title, which had been waived. And as a matter of law, in a suit to quiet title, you can have attorney's fees. And there's law that may suggest, I don't necessarily agree with it, because I think you can still obtain attorney's fees under trespass to quiet title. But that is something that's discretionary with the court, of course, under the Declaratory Judgment Act. Justice McCoy, you have a question.
I'm sure that dog's going to hunt. Okay.
All right. Well, more importantly, and the thing that was shocking to the Nicolais, it is in the very first part of XTO's brief, it says that XTO has been taking minerals from the Nicolais mineral rights. I mean, it's something that had been requested in discovery in the underlying case, had never been seen. The first time that the Nicolais see that XTO has actually been taking the minerals is XTO's opening brief. And that in and of itself is enough, I think, for the trial court or this court to look at in terms of what is fair and equitable. Is it fair and equitable for XTO to have to pay for attorney's fees when they are literally trespassing on the mineral rights of the Nicolais, especially given the trial court's judgment?
So was there no requested relief for temporary relief or injunctive relief during the pendency of this litigation?
Your Honor, there was not, and the reason is because the Nicolais are individuals. When you're talking about mineral rights, it's potentially a lot of money, and the bond was the concern, okay. And unfortunately.
Thank you, Ms. Stroh. Ms. Manning, rebuttal.
Yeah, please, the court. I'm going to try to just laundry list down some of the points raised by Ms. Stroh. First, that the nature of the case was somehow waived because they requested a suit to quiet title and XTO didn't jump up and say, no, it's really trespass to try title case. Well, first of all, we did before judgment. In the motion for judgment, we said, look, this is really a trespass to try title case. If you look at what relief was requested, request was ownership, best ownership of the surface and the minerals into the Nicolais, and that's what the judgment says.
Are you going to trial by consent?
I don't think so. We argued about the validity of the deed.
Normally, if you say that something was tried that wasn't pled, then you say trial by consent, and then you amend your pleading to conform to what was tried.
Right, but I don't think this is a question of trying something that wasn't pled. This is like pleading a breach of contract as a cause of action for fraud. You can call it fraud. It's still a breach of contract if the duty that you're alleging is breached comes from an agreement. Same thing here. You can call it a suit to quiet title. You can call it a suit to remove cloud on title. You can call it a request for declaratory judgment. But under Chapter 22 of the Texas Property Code, if you seek title, if the court is adjudicating title among the parties, that falls under the trespass to try title statute, which, as we all know, is the exclusive means for adjudicating title in Texas.
So under notice pleading, if we read your pleading, it will jump out to us, oh, this is a trespass to try title case, regardless of whether those words are used or not.
I believe so. Just as in the Contours case, if you look at what are you alleging to have done wrong? If that duty is a source of contract, it's a contract case. If it's a duty at law based on a relationship, something to that effect, it's a tort. It doesn't matter what you call it.
And your pleading doesn't call it something else.
Now, and another point that's significant here, XTO didn't ask for title. The appellants didn't seek to have title rendered themselves. We didn't attempt to chain title, introduce leases, any of that stuff. We are strictly within the Declaratory Judgment Act, which lets you ask the court to interpret the validity of a document. That's all we asked for. That's all we're asking for here. Now, the Nicolais asked for that, but they took the next step as well, and that's outside the Declaratory Judgments Act. Nowhere in that statute does it say you can determine title here. It says you can ask the court to tell you if a deed's valid or a contract is valid. So that's the difference. And then when you look at the judgment, the case is Eli Martin, the Kennedy case that's cited in the brief is just about as on point as it gets. Those cases, they look at the judgment. If the judgment grants title, it's a trespass to try title case. And Eli also says that you can't waive that, just like you can't waive a contract claim by trying it as a fraud claim or vice versa. sufficiency. Whether the Shields deed is valid or not doesn't matter. It's still existing writing. You don't have to have a previous deed. You have to have a previous existing writing. Fears is distinguished in the brief. Estoppel, there's a recital. On Hill says that's what estoppel by deed does. It gives effect to recitals and subsequent deeds. Adverse possession, the same issue where she says we don't have to rely on title, was raised both in the Waco Bridge case and in Green, and the court said it doesn't matter. In fact, in Waco Bridge, the party didn't introduce the title. It was trespass to try title, and they said, we're going to take the chance. We're going to take the chance that they can't prove up their own title rather than introduce this deed necessary to ours that has its recital in it. Big evidentiary battle, the court said can't do that. If it's there, it counts. Prior possession, there's no prior possession here. That would be if they were out there drilling wells. That doesn't even apply here. The order on the fees is general. It just says fees are denied. There's no way looking at that to know whether it was denied on the matter of law because it's a trespass to try title case or whether it was denied because the court did not consider it equitable and just. There's just no way to know. So that answers that. I just urge the court again, estoppel by deed resolves the party, the issues among all parties, and it is fair. A long time ago, parties made a contract. They're bound by it, as are their privies, on down the line. In 1922, they did it again. I mean, just as, you know, XTO is relying on a chain of title, just like the Nicolais are, and it's estoppel by deed, it's fair, but it's beyond fair. It's an issue of, are we going to allow parties to talk out of both sides of their mouth, to look at a contract or a deed or a judgment or anything else and say, well, I like this part and I'm relying on it, but I don't like this part. The law doesn't tolerate those kinds of inconsistent positions, and that goes beyond fairness.
Thank you, Ms. Manning. Thank you, Ms. Stroh. Your case is submitted. You all are excused.